So Boris has blasted Putin for, of all things, toxic masculinity. Can you believe it?
I mean, that's some toxic femininity on Boris Johnson's part, isn't it?
Well, that's what I think. But he has said if Putin were a woman, he would not have invaded Ukraine. And this is just so ludicrous. I'm going to go into detail why it's ludicrous with historical examples. They continue on the BBC. The Ukraine Prime Minister said the, quote, crazy macho invasion was a perfect example of toxic masculinity, and he called for more women in positions of power. But Downing Street said there was not a deliberate policy to publicly belittle Mr. Putin. I'm sorry, calling him crazy macho is not exactly belittling him, is it?
Yeah, calling him macho is not... That's helping his public image, isn't it, a little bit?
Yeah, this language just bigs Putin up in most of the world. Like, toxic masculinity is a complete joke, an utterly pseudoscientific sociological theory, and nobody using that kind of language in earnest should be taken seriously. Mr. Johnson's comments come ahead of a NATO meeting in Spain, where allies will discuss how to respond to future threats. At the summit in Madrid, he is set to call on fellow members of the Defensive Alliance to ramp up defense spending. And just to really hammer home how ridiculous this accusation is, we're going to look back into Russian history at Catherine the Great.
Oh, yeah, she never started any wars, did she?
Yeah, well, and so she essentially conquered Poland, annexed it in a series of partitions, which we'll go into, which is, you could argue, exactly what Vladimir Putin is trying to do in Ukraine. Some of the territory of modern-day Ukraine was annexed by Catherine the Great. And I'm calling her Catherine the Great, not because I think she's great, it's just a common name for her, but I assure you that many of my friends from Eastern Europe do not use that epithet. In fact, they seem to be mysteriously paralyzed with coughing and spitting fits when they mention her name, but there we go. And she's also worth mentioning because Vladimir Putin actually cited her in the speeches he gave in the lead up to the invasion. As they say here, in his speech legitimizing Russia's annexation of Crimea in 2014, Vladimir Putin invoked 18th century history. It was, after all, Catherine II who had first acquired the peninsula for Russia at the same time she seized what is now Belarusian territory in the first partition of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. In the second partition, 21 years later, Catherine acquired extensive lands lying today in both Belarus and Ukraine. She amassed even more 2 years later in Poland-Lithuania's final partition. So these three partitions between 1772 and 1795 eliminated Poland and Lithuania, wiped them off the map for 123 years, and the Polish and the Lithuanians are still bitter about it, as you can well imagine.
Well, you can't blame them, can you?
Of course not. Basically, Prussia and Russia invaded Poland at this time long before the mid-century Germans, and it was a woman who did it. You know, Catherine the Great, Catherine II, not exactly an example of toxic masculinity. And this is part of the exact territory being brought over today. We have a map here showing, mapping the partitions, and it was mainly Prussia and Russia, but Austria had a slice of the cake in the first and third partitions. An entire country. You know, they didn't go in with panzers this time, but there we go. And this is a point so obvious, by the way, that I was actually beaten to the punch by Sam Ashworth-Hayes at The Critic. He points out here, as Rudyard Kipling once observed, the female of the species is more deadly than the male, and this observation applies to Mother Russia just as well as to Mother Grizzlies. That's good framing. Catherine the Great's rule saw Russia expand by 200,000 square miles, gobbling up Belarus, Lithuania, Crimea, and much of modern Ukraine in the process, achieving precisely the goal Putin has set himself. And then just reading from a 2011 study from the University of Chicago, he goes on to note, researchers found that the greater female representation in legislative bodies decreased spending on defense and the likelihood of conflict. So, job done, right? Well, no, because greater female representation in the executive branch saw more conflict behavior and defense spending.
So, does that mean it balances out and they're like a...
Well, you could argue that,
neutral.
But certainly if Vladimir Putin were female, according to this study at least, he would have been more aggressive and not less. And that's what the point
is. Sure, he wouldn't have been passive aggressive.
That's a possibility. We'll get on to that in a second. Given that Putin presides as effective dictator for life in Russia, it suggests if he were female, his foreign policy would probably involve tanks flooding into Poland. Boris should remember Kipling's words and be grateful for small mercies. And another person who made a similar point on this was a guest writer of ours, John Tangney, which you can read on our website here. Sanctions on Russia will create a monster is the argument he's making, and he's questioning the effectiveness of the sanctions we made. Well, given that the Russian economy is still able to support a war effort in Ukraine, the sanctions do seem to have been less effective than we predicted, mm-hmm. although time will tell.
They've pretty much damaged everyone. It's kind of, we've self-inflicted a wound here in an attempt to wound Russia at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I understand that if you're in a military alliance, you don't trade with your opposition. That's pretty basic. But even so, it doesn't seem to have worked.
Mm. And in this article, he makes the really interesting point, which I'll quote here. Sanctions are also a rather passive and, one might argue, feminine form of aggression, in that it involves national reputation destruction and the manipulation of the geopolitical environment against Russia while preserving a level of plausible deniability about its own belligerence.
The West is more or less gaslighting.
Well, yeah.
In a sense.
Basically, he's almost comparing this to like schoolgirl politics in the sense, mm-hmm. oh, we're not going to talk to Russia. Oh, no, we're not going to trade whatever it is with Russia. Oh, no, Russia, I'm not going to sit next to the bus. You get the tortured metaphor. But I think this is a really interesting comment on masculine and feminine forms of aggression, which I believe in the psychological literature are well established to manifest in different ways.
Absolutely, yes. So, male aggression tends to be more physically based, whereas female aggression, it's more about, as you alluded to, reputational destruction. It's more underhanded, more towards the espionage sort of style of things, whereas male aggression is more upfront. It's more face to face. It's not daggers in the dark sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it's fair to say that that war is like at this sort of macro manifestation of that masculine aggression, and that sanctions are a feminine version in a sense?
Well, in a modern war, there are lots of different elements to a conflict, aren't there? Mm. So you could say that the soldiers doing logistics and organizing stuff, oh, that's maybe a bit feminine, whereas the ones in the front line, oh, they're very masculine. And I feel like it's a fun exercise to do it,
yeah.
But you're not going to get massive insight looking at it at that level. But yeah. Characterizing the actions of states in that way might mm-hmm. be a bit more interesting, because it allows you to predict how they might behave on the international stage in the mm-hmm. future yeah. If you establish a pattern, which is, of course, what you're trying to do, I think.
Yeah, but I do think the overly sort of Jungian characterization of masculine and feminine states is... You know, and you hear this a lot of the time, like sometimes, oh, the Labour Party's more like your mother, but the Conservatives are more like your father, and that sort of thing. Attempts to dichotomize left and right politically with male and female, or father and mother.
To be fair, the Conservatives are more like your father if he was in drag.
I mean, yes, at the moment, true. But sorry, that has derailed me. But yeah, I think it's interesting to look at things from this angle, but again, take it with a pinch of salt. And then going before a serious committee of serious people who are looking to spend serious money to seriously kill people and saying, oh, this is toxic masculinity, I think is absolutely ridiculous.
Of course it is, yeah.
So it may be in the West that maleness has been demonized to the extent that shrill accusations of toxic masculinity resonate with the Westminster woke. But casting Vladimir Putin as an excessively macho man is hardly likely to win over the rest of the world.
I mean, it's certainly not going to harm his reputation in Russia, that's for sure.
No, like outside of the woke West, masculinity is a virtue, not a vice. Enough said. But he's not the only one, because his colleague, Ben Wallace, our defense secretary, has also been jumping in to, you know, do this sort of pop psychology of Vladimir Putin. I think it's very illuminating what our colleague has to say. Vladimir Putin is a lunatic with small man syndrome and a macho view of the world, Ben Wallace said.
Small man syndrome.
His comments came after Boris Johnson said the Russian leader's invasion of Ukraine was an example of toxic masculinity, and a female president would not have made the same mistake. Mr. Wallace told LBC Radio, well, I certainly think President Putin's view of himself and the world is a small man syndrome macho view.
It's funny that all of the weapons we've supplied to Ukraine, clearly not enough. We've also got to call him names.
Yes.
That's really going to turn the conflict.
I know. He added, you rarely hear the phrase small woman syndrome. You always hear small man syndrome. I think he's certainly got it in spades, he said. So I think Ben Wallace is actually punching down here because he himself isn't a sounding 6'9". Oh, wait, that's the wrong Ben Wallace. No, this is Ben Wallace. As you can see, the shortest man in the lineup.
What, the guy in the middle?
Yep.
With the sort of feminine head tilt.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yep,
that's our Ben Wallace. I can't find a measurement for Ben's height, but judging by the photos I've seen, I wouldn't be surprised if he were about 5'4". I've seen other photos where there are school children towering over him. But it's
probably, that's good for our defense secretary. Yeah, great.
But it's probably best not to ask him about his height because he might go full tonto about it. Putin, by the way, is listed as 5'7". I don't know whether that's true or some clever manipulation. Maybe he's actually 5'6" and they've added the extra inch with all of this clever scheming. But
some toxic masculinity lying about an extra inch.
Yeah, it would be a lot of fun if you put them next to each other, face-to-face conversation, and Putin were the taller man. Sadly, we probably won't get that opportunity. But on that note, if we move on, what would happen if Putin was a woman? I think this is an interesting thought experiment, and John, our producer, also thinks so. So if you have any ideas on what if hashtag Putin was a woman, then whack that on Twitter and see if we can get that trending, because we could get some rather amusing thoughts. So moving on a bit.
That's horrifying.
Yeah. So the BBC is also reporting that Putin's cousin is among the inner circle hit by new UK sanctions. His female cousin, Anna Vilova, or something like that. Mm-hmm. The latest wave of sanctions will weaken the Russian war machine, the US government says. Slightly desperately at this point.
Yeah, Putin's cousin is the key to the entire invasion.
Anna Vilova, that's the one.
Yep. Is she even involved in any way or just related?
Vladimir Putin's first cousin once removed. So, yeah, really the inner circle, I'm sure. The sanctions imposed by the West on Russia after its invasion of Ukraine are mad and thoughtless, Putin has said. Speaking at a forum in St. Petersburg, he said the economic blitzkrieg against Russia had no chance of succeeding from the very beginning, and he said the restrictions were more harmful to those who imposed them. Well, obviously he's going to say that. It's not exactly representative of the truth, but just representing what he's saying. Speaking at the annual St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, Putin claimed the EU could lose more than $400 billion or £326 billion because of its sanctions against Russia. That's a lot of money. He said inflation was increasing across the 27-member bloc and the real interests of people in Europe were being sidelined, but did not explain what that meant. That's just the BBC's commentary there. What could it possibly mean that the people's interests are being sidelined and inflation is skyrocketing? What does that mean? It's just a mystery. The BBC can't decipher it. Putin's clearly a lunatic.
To be fair, the BBC is full of leftists, so they probably don't understand economics.
That's true. However, Mr. Putin's own officials have warned that the Russian economy is suffering serious damage from the sanctions. Central Bank Governor Elvira Nabiullina said on Thursday that 15% of the country's GDP was threatened by the international response, which I've no doubt is close to the truth. On Friday, the head of the country's largest lender, Sberbank, warned that it could take more than a decade for Russia's economy to return to 2021 levels. But Mr. Putin sought to strike an optimistic tone and also implored Russia's major businesses to keep working in the country, amid reports that an increasing number of business owners were refocusing their efforts on overseas operations. He has this quote at the end, which I just want to lean on a little. "Invest here, it's safer in your own house. Those who didn't want to listen to this have lost millions abroad," Mr. Putin has said. And this is entirely true because of our policy of just yoinking and grabbing the property of oligarchs and Russian-related people, basically arbitrarily.
Didn't necessarily have to be in any way friendly with the regime of Putin. Mm-hmm. It's just, you're rich, you're Russian.
Bam.
Yes.
As now. And I think, yes, you can make the case these people have illegitimate wealth, they don't deserve it, they're doing bad things in the world and so on and so forth. But it does set a rather grim precedent, I think, when you just go around grabbing people's money because the state doesn't like them.
It wasn't like it was taken to a court and assessed, it was just something that the government did.
This is exactly the sort of, what's the word, habeas corpus, that Magna Carta was set up to prevent, for example.
Exactly.
Now you can argue, well, these people aren't British citizens and so on, and that is a good argument, although I'm sure some of them are. But it's very much something you need to be careful about. When it's happening to your enemies and bad people, it's very easy to be blasé about it, but of course it never stops there. But this segment does.
Thanks for watching that segment from the podcast of the Lotus Eaters. If you enjoyed that, you can sign up and become a member on our website and access our premium content, like my most recent article, Libertarians Should Not Trust Big Business. If you want to find me on social media, you can find me on Getter at Harry Lotus Eater. Thank you and goodbye.